All right. Eddie. I guess you just take one. One G is all it takes. Issues if people want them slightly reorganized to get things that go together a little better together. And so I think I want to start with a question by our... Oops, wrong thing here. Sorry, this is my waste.
Okay.
Just going through my pile and getting rid of stuff that was getting in the way. So we have something by RP, one of several interesting ones, so let's start with that.
RP in the house?
Yes. Essentially, it can be defined as past pieces of awareness, abstraction, and coping with experiences. Alternatively, you can define as past pieces in the subject. Human level AIs may not be sentient under your definition. Do you think that's a good conclusion or not? And does that mean that traditional concerns tied to sentience should not apply to AIs, such as the right to own oneself or the right to assert your standards of agreement? And so the part about being able to experience pain and suffering, I think that from a lot of animal rights activists and the treaty that founded the EU, which states the union and member states shall, since animals are sentient beings, they play a large role for requirements of animals. That's kind of where I got the standards of treatment. And as far as subjective experience of activism, I don't know how exactly you can apply the AIs would be, but I would think that even if they could pass the Turing test in terms of taking the stress.
Why?
Such as, like, I'm thinking that I'm thinking, or going like from the idea of virtues to platonic ideals, stuff like that.
But what about self-awareness? That it seems to me that at least part of our intuition of the difference between an AI and this computer is self-awareness, isn't it? That we sort of think of an AI as being a person or not?
I was trying to think. I feel like that would be another type of Turing test skill where you can tell that they were self-aware, and I wasn't able to think that through with any machine clarity.
So if, for a moment, before we get to your question, suppose we ask, is this an AI or not? Is this an AI? Are we using it broadly enough to mean any device that does things like thinking?
I mean, it depends. The science fiction sort of idea of an AI would be like the Blade Runner reference.
Can we tell if you are self-aware?
I mean, there's a lot of philosophies around where people just believe that their universe is all the universe and everything else is just an extension of that. So you can't obviously.
Yeah, well, I think usual solipsist believes the other people are part of Ari's imagination as opposed to but suppose you take the position which I think Descartes took, if I remember correctly, that animals are really just automatons.
Yeah.
How do you disprove it?
I don't think you can. So my ultimate conclusion was that sentience may not matter. There's probably more of a sociological construct that we use to define varying levels of intelligence and how we feel about treating them and how we often feel about treating them. And I guess my ultimate conclusion is that if they can't feel pain or having just sadness like subjective experiences, it may not even matter if they have the same levels as we do.
Why do you assume that they can't feel pain?
I guess I don't know how pain seems like a chemical reaction to me. It's like my head.
It happens inside your head, right?
Right. It's more of like a physical sensation. I don't know if AI have physical sensations in that manner. I don't know if that would be part of like AI.
Suppose for a moment that we take the reverse engineering approach in which the way we create our AI is to exactly emulate a functioning human brain. That presumably is going to have pain, won't it?
I mean, yeah, I guess it depends on the type of AI that we create, or as they evolve, they can evolve.
Why do we have pain?
Evolutionary response.
Why? What's its function? What?
One is danger, I guess.
And wouldn't a good design policy, if you're making your $17 million machine, be to give it a strong signal when it's doing things that are about to destroy itself?
I don't know, some people might come to the conclusion that pain is no longer like evolutionary advantageous, it's not being needed out because there's no evolutionary pressure. But that's a good question.
But I guess what I'm, I don't think that's what I think what I'm saying is, if the reason we evolved pain was it served a certain function, then if that same function is needed for your AI, a engineer would design pain in, wouldn't he, or something like pain?
Well, I'm saying that it might not be necessary for that capacity anymore. So if an engineer who is designing AI came to that conclusion, they might not design pain for AI.
Why would it not be necessary? If you put your hand on a red-hot iron and don't feel pain, aren't unfortunate consequences going to occur?
Well, I don't know. I feel would an AI need to be very sure about it?
I don't know any reason to assume that an AI would be any sturdier than we are. That is, the AI says that it's an artificial intelligence. It doesn't tell us that it's a Superman. Why do you think a metal robot would be stronger than a human being?
I don't know if it would be stronger.
Why would it be?
More hardy.
Would it? Would it? I mean, we've got this wonderful self-repairing system. You know, metal, you dent it, it stays dented. Skin, you scratch it, pretty soon it's as good as new. And I would have said that we represent a much higher technology than our machinery does, given that we're engineered at the atomic scale, and that if anything, there's a wonderful essay by Asimov somewhere, which is sort of a spoof of your attitude, in which the somebody or other is escaping from the mad scientist and his horde of robots. And Asimov goes through why all of the robots fail, basically because they are less capable than human beings, not more. You know, you think of metal as strong, but if your metal is sort of armor thickness, it's also very heavy, and then your machine has lots of problems, like, you know, sinking into damp ground and using up a lot of power and so forth. So anyway, I guess what I'm really saying is I don't know what machines would be like, but I think imagining that because it does its thinking with a computer, therefore it will also have various Superman characteristics is really sort of adding on things that have no particular connection. Yeah?
I think it's interesting that you use the concept of pain to differentiate, to try to find either common ground or if there is no common ground. And perhaps it's not pain, but reaction with the intent for self-preservation. So pain is specific to humans and perceptibly to animals as well to promote self-preservation. An AI might have something else built in that isn't pain, but that is something analogous.
This is sort of reminding me of the person, of the scholar who demonstrated that the Odyssey and the Iliad were not really written by Homer at all, but by a Greek contemporary of the same name. That is to say, what are the defining characteristics of pain by which you can say that a functional equivalent isn't pain? I don't know either. I mean,
But, I mean, I'm just thinking
yes.
That if there is, if for us it's pain, for an AI it might be something else, but it would.
But it has to be something that has the characteristic that when you feel it, you very much want to avoid it. That's the function of pain, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to sound an awful lot like pain to me, in a sense, right?
Yeah. I mean, whatever reaction it would be, it would threaten self-preservation. So I don't know a lot about computers,
yeah.
But perhaps if somebody was trying to feed it a virus that would interact with, like, I'm thinking just movies it seen with its, like, object code or something like that, that it would, you know, completely shut down or something of the equivalent, you know. That doesn't mean it's physically indestructible, but perhaps.
Does anybody read science fiction books anymore? Whenever anybody talks about science fiction in these classes, there's always movies. No one reads anymore. All right. It's terrible.
That Blade Runner was based off of.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember.
Do androids dream of electronic sheep? I think, yeah. Right. All right. Just curious. Yes.
I was just going to follow up. So I think a lot of computers could be set to, you know, self-preserve right now by, you know, if we're going to overheat a while back, things like that. And so if an AI is self-aware, or even if it needs to hold at a very high level, you know,
it seems to me that pain is one step more sophisticated than that. That is to say, think about what happens when you touch a hot metal. And there are two different things. One of them is you automatically jerk back. Or think about the eye blinking, say, when something approaches it. And another is that you feel pain. And it would seem to me that the advantage, the sense in which pain is the more sophisticated, is that the jump back or the blink is do a particular thing. The pain is a signal to you, you must do something to stop this, and now if you're a rational being, you figure out what, so to speak. And I would have thought that if you went from a computer which automatically shuts itself down when it overheats, to a thinking machine which, when it overheats, in effect gets a command to find some way to stop this happening, that that sounds more like pain and less like an automatic shutout. But, yep.
But that division of pain applies to dogs also, and dogs aren't on the same level as humans.
Right. But he was in fact using animal rights as his model for what gets rights. That is, there are two steps in the argument. I understand you. You're not yet asking in this question, are they equivalent of humans? They're asking, are they at least the equivalent of animals? Right.
Okay.
So that was the point of that particular question. And I think most of us, I think anybody who's actually sort of lived with dogs and cats thinks Descartes crazy, thinks that they obviously are self-conscious, just sort of interacting with them, even if they don't have a sophisticated language. And, yeah.
Well, in some database systems, if a computer detects something's going wrong, it will not know what exact room, but it will start doing others to figure out which thing shut down. So, I mean, you were looking for a higher level of pain.
That's
not
right.
Directly what you work on, but if you start thinking about it, it might not say how, but that's what it's doing. And if
you
make something that's wrong, it's just
certainly going in that direction, yeah. On the subject, by the way, of whether animals speak, although it's not really relevant to this, though it's relevant to a different subject that I've covered in this course in the past, let me recommend a book called King Solomon's Ring, which is written by the man who figured out how to talk with animals. Conrad Lorenz was an Austrian, I guess he invented the field, but he was the person who originated the field of animal behavior. And one of the things he did was to solve the languages of a number of species of animals, to figure out what different sounds meant, so that there's this wonderful thing, I think it's at the beginning of the book, where he's talking to, I think, some little geese, and he says the wrong thing, and then he realizes he was speaking duck to them. This is sort of amusing. But he was an interesting guy, anyway. Conrad Lorenz, King Solomon's Ring, because King Solomon was supposed to have a ring, let him understand the language of animals, and Lorenz really did, within certain limits. All right. I think our next question is from A.C. And A.C. is over there, right?
I think my question is Isaac.
That's right, but yours is the next step, really.
So if we agree that a machine can potentially be a candidate for rights, we still must answer which machines and which rights. What would a computer have to do to deserve legal rewards?
Good question.
So I really think the best answer that I can come up with is it would have to be, I think people would have to be able to look at the artificial intelligence and identify with it on some level. Because a lot, we don't give rights to a lot of things that we don't identify with. I wouldn't have a problem throwing a bad computer out the window and breaking it. You know? So there's no...
What if there were another species? Suppose we discovered that some kind of octopus or squid gave lots of evidence of human-level intelligence, but spoke no human language and couldn't communicate with us at all. How would you feel about its rights?
I guess, people say that dolphins are like humans.
Not clear if it's true, but the claim is made, yeah.
Yeah, so, if you were to liken it that, we do give, I feel like, dolphins more rights than you give tuna, which people say, I've never heard anyone compare it to,
But do we also give dolphins more rights than cats and dogs and horses and sort of other large mammals that we interact with?
I don't know. I would think that maybe we give dogs and cats and horses more rights because identify,
I Even some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but we don't give dogs human rights.
Not quite, but...
Do you really feel bad about not letting your dog go out, assuming it's not...
A dog could be held, like, legally liable for attacking a person if it could be put to sleep.
Is legally liable the right term, though?
Well, it gets punished just as if someone would be...
I don't think punishment is the right term, because the reason the dog is being killed is not to discourage other dogs from attacking people. It's not, I don't think it's thought of as punishment, but rather just to remove it because it's a dangerous object, as it were. It's in the same sense in which you fill up a pothole, right? Because that's a dangerous object,
yeah,
too.
I mean,
so
I guess when we imprison people, obviously a key part of that is deterrence, but also it is removing them from society.
That's right. So, yeah,
so
but I guess my point is that
one
the dog is only part of that, and it's a part which also applies to non-living creatures. But going back, your question, I think, really was about human level. So do other people have opinions? What does you have a thing, and I'd rather not imagine it as a robot. I think that's sort of cliche, but you've got some kind of machine which has got a computer in it and seems to be doing things at roughly human level as far as you can tell. What does it have to do to convince you, A, that it's a person, and B, that it has rights? Yeah?
People make a lot of big rationale for this, but the underlying reasoning would be maybe people won't admit it, but the emotional reaction you get. A lot of people who, people who they show extreme racism and power, that's kind of what kind of they will often don't feel as if the class that they don't like is equivalent to them. They don't get the same
But presumably there are two different things you might believe about a living creature who you don't identify with, such as another human or an alien or whatever. One of them is, this isn't really a person. And the other is, this is a person who I don't care about. So that if you think about, say, Nazi anti-Semitism, they aren't claiming that Jews aren't people, right? I mean, you couldn't have an evil, wicked conspiracy to undermine the Aryan race if you weren't people. It's just that these are people who, for some reason, don't, from their standpoint, qualify as having rights. And, of course, it's not clear to what extent any of us give all humans rights. If you think about how the two-year-old who wants to walk into the middle of traffic, you don't really feel as though you're violating its rights when you hold it back. And there are lots of ways in which very small children, we clearly think of them as people, right? I think we even think of babies as people. Certainly, anyone who's interacting with a one-year-old or a two-year-old thinks of it as a person. And yet, we don't think of it as having anything like the full spectrum of human rights. It's not entirely clear that somebody who is badly senile, who again we think of as a person but don't feel as though he has the same spectrum of human rights. So I don't think it's quite as simple as... But it seems to be... Well... Let me let you people talk, because I'm curious about you. Because these are interesting questions, I think. Yeah.
I think you mentioned in the book that the intentionality is huge. If you have a Turing test with some test of intentionality that just proved that this entity was doing something beyond reacting to its environment, would go a long way. Whether or not there's an emotional response, because I think there are people that are emotional.
Let's go back. Why do we expect all people to have the same rights? I mean, if you just think about it, it's a pretty crazy idea. We know human beings vary a whole lot. That we say that the reasons that we think human beings have rights and dogs don't are things like intelligence, foresight, linguistic ability. But all of those things vary among human beings. Why do we think that a very dumb human being has rights and a very smart chimpanzee doesn't? Right, I should say one of the sections I'm not doing this year, but I did in a previous year, was on uplift, where we were imagining ways of raising the intelligence of animals and what issues that would get you. So, can somebody tell me why a very stupid human being has rights and a very smart chimpanzee doesn't? Isn't this you don't believe they overlap? Suppose we had a good IQ test that we could do with chimpanzees, and suppose it turned out that the very top of the chimp distribution just barely overlapped the very bottom of the human distribution. Would everybody feel obligated to? Yeah.
Well, when I was looking up laws for my first question,
yeah.
The common animal rights argument that I ran across was people are just species. Like, they're just preferring.
Why shouldn't we be species?
And they didn't give a good reason, but now they're just.
That's not an argument. That's just demagoguery. Just name calling.
Right. I mean, but when you think about it, there's really no good reason for humans to live for animals other than.
If there is no good reason to do anything, we're back in sort of an amoral world where there's no right and wrong, but nobody really believes that, even though some arguments seem to imply it. But, you know?
So you could argue that there was a time when people were not so intricately connected that they would think only people that are tribal, like everybody else is not, because you just don't have that kind of relationship. But now, it comes to the point that, okay, I mean, you might have some, you know, you want to have the same relationship.
Boy, you're an optimist. The time you're described is yesterday. Look, let me explain something very simple to me. There are many people in America who say they're in favor of the poor. How many of them are in favor of unrestricted immigration? How? Yeah. Or alternatively, let us take anybody, any legislator who is voting to spend some money on welfare. If you point out to him what is obviously true, that the people he wants to give money to are enormously richer than a billion people outside this country, and that therefore you should cut all U.S. welfare to zero, whatever money you're going to spend, you go to India and China and Africa. How many legislators do you think will be persuaded by that argument? So what is your evidence that the attitude that people outside our tribe don't count has disappeared?
I bigger, I guess.
Well, that might be. Right. Might be. We have better communication, but all I'm saying is it seems to me that the basic attitude still is alive and well.
The welfare you give to people outside the tribe, again, it's because you recognize there's some interaction going to go on there, so that you don't want, you know, India to be suffering so much because on some end you're interacting with India, but like, you know, with the.
But the people who argue for helping the poor, they occasionally make the argument we've got to help the poor because otherwise they'll riot or something. But that's not the gut level argument. The gut level argument is we're good, generous people. These people need something. We're going to provide it to them. And yet that argument, not only do you not do anything for the really poor people, I'm not sure, are there any politicians in the U.S.? Certainly every major political party is in favor of serious efforts to prevent poor people from improving their lives by crossing into the U.S. Right? When I read these stories about people smuggling and about how the immigration people say, isn't it terrible that these evil people are smuggling people into the U.S. and sometimes they die? And it doesn't even occur to them that they're the reason those people die, because they wouldn't be smuggling them in, they wouldn't be dying in containers if it were legal to come in. And yet everybody takes that for granted. I mean, it's very much part of human. Yeah.
I have more of a question, though, about like the fact that our taxpayers are paying taxes here, which then redistribute to poor people.
But welfare is taking our taxpayers' money and giving people who aren't paying taxes. American welfare.
But the ultimate goal that eventually they will be able to pay taxes.
Well, you know, back when the war on poverty was declared, that was the goal. Prior to the war on poverty being declared, the U.S. poverty rate had been falling pretty steadily since the end of World War II. After the war on poverty got fully funded, the U.S. poverty rate has been essentially constant ever since, going up and down with the economy. So the original claim was that it was to get people out of poverty, but very rapidly it switched from that, which it was unsuccessful in doing, to making being poor less unpleasant.
And about the immigration, if you let like a flood of immigrants come in here, that would just make our poor people.
And this, well, but first, fine, all right, so you're saying you're taking people who are at level 5 and raising them to level 15. You have the terrible effect that people who are level 80 come down to level 70. Well, if people who are in favor of egalitarianism, you'd think that would be a good thing.
I guess, right.
And of course, you are aware that the U.S., for most of its history, did follow that policy. Right? It's only in the 1920s that we closed down the gates. Right? The U.S., there were exceptions. There were restrictions on Oriental immigrations in California. And there were restrictions on people believed to carry communicable diseases. But roughly speaking, until the 1920s, the U.S. followed free immigration. Somehow we survived the experience. Anyway, this is a long digression, but it does seem to me that you're being much too optimistic in thinking that nowadays everybody values everyone in the world equally and they all have the same rights, because we obviously don't act as if we believe that. But let's go back to the question, because it does seem to me it's relevant to this issue, because in a sense, some of the reasons we might not recognize rights for AIs might be some of the same reasons that a lot of us don't recognize rights for other people, like the right to come into this country, which we don't recognize for most of the world's population.
I think kind of what you said earlier was like, if you felt guilty about injuring an AI or something, I feel like that would play a huge role into it. Because I couldn't like hurt someone's pet, you know, or whatever,
yep.
like an innocent animal, because I would feel really bad about that. But like I said earlier, breaking a TV, yep. I would maybe only feel bad if I like broke Pat's TV because he paid for that TV and would make Pat's TV.
Although to some extent, some machines do end up as the focus of the same emotions. If you think of, say, a car you've driven for a long time, I could easily enough imagine somebody who would be really upset when the car got smashed, even though the insurance company paid him more than enough to replace it, because it was his car, so to speak, and felt guilty about it. So we do a little transference, I think, of those emotions. Let me suggest one reason, sort of from, I guess, from a law and econ perspective, for why we treat the stupid human being differently from the smart chimp. And that is that if we didn't, we would then be spending a lot of resources among human beings trying to prove they had more rights than other human beings. That is, that the nice thing about the rule, all humans have the same rights, is it's a nice bright line rule. And given that there are enormous advantages to having rights, and pretty substantial advantages to depriving other people of rights, depending on who those people happen to be, that you can see that making a bright line, even if it's occasionally the wrong line, may make a good deal of sense from that standpoint. And now, of course, it doesn't have to be the human race. You could argue that black people versus white people worked as a bright line. Didn't work too well because there were a lot of people of mixed race. Men versus women works as a pretty good bright line. Not quite a perfect one. There are people who are ambiguous gender, but not very many. But so it doesn't necessarily give you the result you want. But I think at least some of the patterns we observe do reflect just this idea that if you have a nice, simple classification, you can avoid a lot of very expensive internal conflict over who fits where. Yeah.
So, a friend of mine actually, when I just shipped over to the guy, he gave himself to just abandon me completely. So, he was debating how much meat will I let myself eat. Maybe I'll base it off of what carbon footprint I'm causing, or maybe something else. And then he said, okay, I'm going to draw the line at man, because mammals are distinguished because they have a neocortex, which, you know, supposedly could possibly allow you to dream when you're sleeping, or have an imagination, or think beyond, you know. So anything that's mammal, I won't eat. So beef, you know, red meat, no, chicken's okay. And that, I won't eat as well.
Is he willing to eat cephalopods? Squid and octopus.
Okay, so does it have
I don't know whether they have a neocortex, but I think there's evidence they're pretty bright.
Yeah, I heard
they're very
different. The brightest animal?
They are very different from us. That is, mammals also have the characteristics that we're mammals. Squids are weird, right? I mean, they don't. They're aliens, right? If you think of a squid or an octopus, that's just about as alien as you could imagine from Mars. And yet, it may well be that as animals go, they're pretty smart.
Right now, this is being about mammals, so I think
dolphins and cows. But if he eats sushi, he may be getting some squid or octopus. Yeah. But other comments on that, or go on to the next one? Let's see. The next one, I think we're back with Rick, aren't we? Yes. Another interesting question. You got several interesting questions. Yeah, you're a peer. Sorry, I've got a different order than you do because I reorganized them to put things that went together.
So the issue was, is a human level AI a peer? Should the inability of an AI to empathize or sympathize disqualify them from serving on a jury? And so I was thinking that when reasonable people disagree on a contested issue, we just talk about this subjective decision making. But at least my perception is that AI is becoming decision weighing data unencumbered by emotional components. So if a jury question didn't have enough quantifiable data to reach an answer, would an RNG, which is a random number generator, decision be a satisfactory substitute? And I felt that perhaps what you can see is pretty analogous to that.
Why would it have to be a random number generator? What if the computer just says, here is my probability cutoff. I have whatever probability estimate I have. If it's above the cutoff, we vote to convict. And if it's below, we vote to acquit.
You can do that. Actually, I was envisioning a more extreme scenario.
A what?
A more extreme scenario is the probability is just too low, I guess, for them to do adequately. But I'm not sure you can do it that way.
In fact, the probability is low doesn't make it any harder to calculate what it is, right?
Well, I guess they could do that, but I guess I was more focused on whether the machine is able to relate to peers, and I felt not, because if they can't relate to us, we have no indicia that we...
Part of this is why do we use a jury system at all? And the argument, it seems to me, that you're implying, which is a possible argument, I'm not sure it's a correct one, is that human beings are good at understanding human beings, and we therefore say that having a bunch of more or less random human beings make the decision is a way of getting a correct decision. And then, of course, the response is, well, but a judge is a human being, too. Why can't he do it just as well? Why do we use juries? And, you know, there are other arguments for juries, one of which is it's a way of constraining the government and the court system, that if you're trying to do things that most people think of as unjust, you'll get acquittals and so forth. You want to say, no. Yeah.
Because I was wondering if lack of empathy disqualifies someone from jury service now, either sociopaths or someone on the autism spectrum, doesn't have the ability to influence someone else, still potentially serve on the jury.
I doubt that it does. The question would be, should it?
Yeah.
Maybe you should qualify them. You know, you could certainly make the argument that empathy is going to interfere. That, you know, think of the sort of the whole line of defense argument, which goes back to at least the Athenians, which consists of saying, wouldn't it be terrible if this person were executed? He's got a child, he's got a wife, have some sympathy for him. It's true he murdered 17 people, you know, in an indefensible way, but they're dead, we can't bring them back. That line of argument might be a lot less persuasive to a psychopath. I don't know. So maybe a psychopath would make a better juror if you assume that he, for some reason, wants to get the right result. Of course, this also turns it around. If your argument is right, should we be allowed to serve on a jury for an AI that's being tried? Is the real argument that the AI lacks characteristics necessary to be on a jury, or lacks characteristics necessary to judge a human being? Because they're very different claims.
My thought was that they are being unable to judge us. I hadn't thought about the reverse angle.
Because it seems to me that in terms of judgment, I don't see any particular reason. I mean, after all, what are AIs going to be out there doing? Quite aside from juries, they're going to be making decisions, you know, controlling machines. There are all sorts of, most of the things you want an AI to do, in a general sense, are making decisions. So why are they less able to make decisions for juries rather than anything else? And then a possible answer is, they don't understand human beings very well, so if you're trying human beings, they'll get the wrong answer. And if that's right, then that's a reason to say yes, and then when you're trying an AI, we don't want a human on the jury, because he'll get the wrong answer. Make sense? Yes? No? Maybe. Next one of yours, I'm not sure I entirely understand, but that's the NP complete argument.
My idea was that there's some idea of consciousness that we have that can be replicated in programming, and
why not?
Regardless of having that
problem. Why would you imagine that it couldn't be replicated? What are you assuming? What are you assuming we have that is more than programming?
Just the fact that so far we have a lot of trouble understanding where consciousness originates in our body suggests to me that there's at least something fundamentally that we don't understand about it right now.
Clearly true.
We currently don't understand if we're going to be able to replicate it in an AI.
That doesn't follow.
It doesn't. That's what I mean.
But it's certainly possible,
yeah.
Right?
So my idea was that if they don't have that matter of consciousness, in some way, all of their decision making is deterministic. Whereas ours with consciousness is somehow more than deterministic.
What is more than deterministic? I understand not deterministic, but what's more than?
I'm sorry, not deterministic. Not the same. It doesn't follow that everything's causally related, at least as far as like decision making goes. And if that's the case for AI, where everything they do is deterministic, does that mean that all AI requirements should be strict liability?
But to begin with, everything they do can't be deterministic because of quantum mechanical considerations, right? The universe isn't deterministic, right? There's something called the uncertainty principle. So therefore, in that sense, it's not deterministic. And certainly, if we want to make it not deterministic, we could easily enough build in random number generators or the equivalent into our AIs, right? So, but I'm not quite sure why that gets you to strict liability crimes.
So my idea was that if they didn't, they couldn't build, I guess, dot trees the way we did, the entire program would essentially be something like a very flexible chart where if certain things happen, it would inevitably lead down certain decision paths. So inevitably, you could always trace their decision to something tangible. So you know for every situation, the specific intent and a crime would also be satisfied because you know they intended to do that or not. That was my idea, at least.
I'm not sure I see that. Let's suppose, for example, that the intent was to drive an automobile from here to there. And unknown to the AI, the road was rather slippery. And unknown to the AI, there was somebody standing very close to the road. And the car skidded and he hit it. Why would that be a strict liability? Why is that different from the same thing happening with a human being?
It sounds like maybe
All right, I think of strict liability and negligence as two alternatives. But you're thinking specifically of criminal law rather than tort law. But in the criminal law, you're supposed to have intent. And in the case I just described, which we might treat as a tort, but you could imagine a legal system treating it as a crime too, I'm not sure why you have to have intent, given that you're in a universe which has unknown factors to the AI and random factors to the AI. Therefore, even if the AI's behavior was deterministic, it doesn't follow that what happens from the AI's behavior is deterministic. An AI takes certain acts, and those acts have a consequence. And the consequence is that somebody dies. Even if it were the case that the AI faced with exactly the same environment would always do exactly the same thing, it doesn't follow that because the AI was faced with the environment and did that thing, anybody would die, because whether they die also depends on a whole bunch of other things, many of which the AI can't know or can't control. Was there somebody standing next to the road there and so forth? How vulnerable was the person who the AI hit with a baseball bat? That it was seen to me that I'm not sure how you get... Maybe I'm just missing the argument. I'm not sure I see how you're getting to... You are always liable without proving intent from the lack of randomness, from the determinist. Yeah.
Well, I was also going to say what you're saying kind of presumes that every AI is going to evolve in the exact same way, and so because they're whatever they are, whether it's reactionary or whatever, you start them out and send them off in the world, and now they're constantly learning.
Yes.
So each AI is separate, and presumably, just like a human being, you could go from whatever positive reactions you're receiving, assuming that things are the right thing as far as even laws are concerned or whatever, that are not. So now you have, like, in whatever that AI's tree is, separate than another one. So I mean, strict liability just seems just strange to me, and I think I'm saying a similar thing to you, where like they're not all the exact same thing. So you can't.
But also their environment isn't fully controlled, just as ours isn't.
I read it that they can never have the intent required for communication or something like that. So if, to the extent that there are crimes, it would have to be necessarily a strict liability crime.
I'm not sure what you're getting at exactly.
Why can't an AI kill someone? Don't you care whether or not it intended to?
I think what I'm saying is you could always trace out the exact path that led them to that scenario, whereas you couldn't do that for a human.
But why does that answer the question of whether or not it's guilty of murder? That is, suppose the path that led to killing somebody was that it saw what, according to its pattern recognition software, was a wild animal about to attack another human being, and it happened to have a weapon, and so it killed the animal. But unfortunately, that wild animal, that what it thought was a wild animal, was really a person. It was really attacking, you know, it was breaking a rock with a hammer or something. Its software didn't do a perfect job. The light was very bad. So that's why it killed it. Don't you care whether that's what happened or whether what happened was the AI said, this particular human being is in my way. It's competing with the job I want to do. I'm going to kill it. Well, if the AI thought it was defending itself, that's not manslaughter, right? That's a legitimate defense. If it had a good reason to think it was defending itself. But the fact that it's determinate doesn't mean it can't be mistaken.
I'm not sold to this question.
I'm not sure that I understand the argument. But let's keep on going, and let's see. On this one, I think we're back with AC, aren't we? Yes. Just on my next one, complex computer systems question.
With complex computer systems consisting of a combination of overlapping programs created by different coders, it is often difficult to know who should bear moral blame or legal liability for computer action that produces an injury. Should the coders, manufacturers, users, or the AI itself be blameworthy or liable for harm caused by an AI gone wrong? And I think there's a lot of ways to do this. One would be to think of the AI as being like basically an instrument of the programmer or the manufacturer, where they programmed it to do something wrong. And in which case, I think obviously the you're not really assuming that the AI has a human level intelligence, which kind of goes against the concept of AI.
Yes.
So the perpetrator in that case would be the programmer or the toy manufacturer. They can be held liable under a lot of different agency law, under which I think goes hand in hand with tort law, and also several different theories of criminal liability. Another model of criminal of liability would be to kind of think that the programmers didn't think, or they should have known that the computer or the AI could go and do something that would hurt somebody, in which case they would be held under more of like a negligence cause of action instead of having to intend to hurt somebody with AI. And then a third one would be to think of the AI as forming its own volition to do it, in which case I think...
Which is a good deal, that's going back to some of these questions of when it's the person, that's a good deal of what makes AI seem interesting is imagining ones to do.
Yeah.
How do we treat the equivalent case for people? Let us suppose that I am a really persuasive, charismatic leader, and I start a sect of a religion. It's not actually a new religion. I imported it from India. It's called Kali worship. And I call my disciples Thuggees. And the final ceremony by which you satisfy the goddess Kali involves killing somebody. Strangling, in fact. So am I liable for their murders?
I think you could be. It could be like a criminal conspiracy.
Suppose I have no planning of the murder at all. I preach the religion. I'm really good at preaching the religion, so I convert some people, and I tell them, it doesn't count if I planned it. Just, you know, I don't even want to see. The goddess wants to see the evidence that you have killed somebody. I don't have to know. But that's how you will get into heaven, or how you will do what you're doing. Am I liable when they go and kill somebody?
Well, I think for sure they will be liable.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah, so... I don't know. That's a good question because I can't remember all the elements of conspiracy.
That's why Charles Manson's in jail. Didn't that essentially what he did was convince all, or did he just target people?
I thought that he was actually involved in the crimes himself.
I thought he didn't kill anyone himself. I thought he was telling them to do it.
But telling them what to do is not, I mean, there's a difference between telling them what to do and changing them in ways such that they would do things. And that, it seems to me, is the interesting parallel here. Yep.
One interesting thing that I came across would be in that case, so right now we do have software, right, that's out, and right now insecure software, for the most part, you are not holding the manufacturer liable for damages. Much of it is rooted in the concept of whether data is actually property or something worth being damaged. So if you imagine a world where you have some artificial intelligence that is capable of doing actual damage, then you could hold those manufacturers liable. I also thought it interesting to consider when you were saying the negligence standard, so professional malpractice, and right now you don't have that for computer engineers, but you could imagine if you hold doctors to standards, if you're essentially creating what could be perceived as life, certainly you would hold people to that.
Another thing that I kind of thought of, but I didn't really look into it too much, is like what type of liability does a parent have if like the kid does something?
That's right. So, because, but I can give you at least one very partial answer, which is that in some past societies, and I think the one that was described to me would have been Germany around the 17th century or so, parents were held responsible for teaching their child a trade, and that it was fined or something if they didn't, and presumably the theory was if they didn't, the child could end up a burden on the local community. He'd be on welfare because he couldn't earn a living. That letting your child go fishing too often might be an offense because he was learning to be lazy instead of to work hard and so forth. So I think there at least have been legal systems which held that parents had a legal obligation to bring up their children in such a way that the children would not be a liability on the society. And I guess you could even argue that compulsory schooling, suppose we do have compulsory schooling in our society, and you could even have compulsory schooling without public schools, although in fact we have both. But even with public schools, you can imagine a parent who said, I'd rather not have the trouble of taking my child to the school, I have things he can usefully do at home and so forth. And so there's a certain sense in which our legal system does require parents to bring up children in ways that we at least would like to believe make them more likely to be productive. It's not clear if it's sure, as you may know, Peter Thiel has got an offer out of $100,000 to people who, instead of going to college, go and do an entrepreneurial project. Of course, he's got a limited number of these. You've got to satisfy that you've got a really good entrepreneurial project. But his theory basically is just the opposite. It's that going to college is a bad thing from the standpoint of at least the kind of person who could be inventing a new product or whatever. But the other people, yeah.
Well, I was thinking the problem should divide into two different areas. One is the criminal liability and one is the civil liability, yeah. Right? So if you look at the criminal liability, there is a conspiracy law, but let's say the preacher was inciting somebody, I don't think they can be charged for murder, but unless they conspire to murder the person, yeah. But just otherwise they're charged in a different crime, like incitement of violence or hate crime.
But in my case, suppose they're simply preaching a religion,
right.
And one of the tenets of the religion is that Kali wants you to murder people.
Right, and if you want to bring criminal charges, then you have to provide them the same protection under the Constitution. And then there is a test for sanity also, that whether the person is sane or not. So there is a very specific definition that has to do with knowing what's right from wrong and all that. So for an AI, if we assume it to that level, then pretty much we're assuming it of some sort. So I'm not sure if you could ever take it to the point where you start prosecuting AIs for criminal behavior. Now, from civil side, I think that this problem can be solved by just doing this district part liability. So that way, you have everybody who's in the chain of creating that particular AI could be responsible for its consequences and actions.
And are you willing to follow that policy for human beings as well, that everybody in the chain towards creating a particular human being is liable for anything bad that human being does? Do you have children?
Yes, I am not.
So if one of your children breaks my window, if one of your children as an adult breaks my window, can I sue you for product liability?
Assuming that I have control to the extent that I...
You are the reason the child turned out the way it did.
That'd be interesting.
I think that's a good question, though, because if you were to look at it like that, there's so much that goes into like, human. you just hold the person liable usually on their own, and you wouldn't, like, you know, if you influenced me in this classroom maybe to do something I wouldn't have done, you wouldn't be held liable for that. I don't
right.
think it would be a question. So,
yeah.
Do you force every robot or every AI to carry insurance now? How are they going to pay any of these judgments as well?
From their own earnings. From their earnings. From, I mean, some human beings are judgment-proof too, but if we're assuming human-level AI, then presumably many of them at least will have assets.
Yeah, they'd probably be able to perform services out of that.
I mean, it's true that we're being pretty hazy about our background, but if we imagine AIs that can do about the things humans can do, and therefore have convinced us that they're humans, and therefore they have rights, and they're not slaves, and they can own stuff, and all the rest of it, there are still problems left. All right, there's a sense in which that's skipping over 98% of the weirdness. But even after skipping over that, there's still the question, even if they are enough like humans to have some sort of rights, they're still different from humans, and they're different in ways that might be important. And let's see. Next one was, I think, you again. In fact, you have two, really. I guess I'd love you.
Here, Pat kind of raised the same question.
Yes.
So maybe we do this.
Sure.
Pretty much, how would you, let's just assume AI could be criminal,
right.
criminally viable.
Yeah.
How would you punish an AI?
One of the things that I think talks about this is that this is, if it is an entity you consider to be living or whatever, is that it doesn't have a finite lifespan. So if you're going to put it in prison, does it care that it's in prison? Does it understand? You can, I suppose, explain that it's a bad robot and that's why it's in prison. Is it okay to have it in the same
But it seems to me that in order for it to be punishment, we have to know what the AI wants. That you have that for the concept of punishment to make any sense, the AI has to have purposes. And once it has purposes, you can say we'll frustrate those purposes. If its purpose is to show off to other AIs how clever it is at solving math problems, then we deprive it of the option of being fed difficult math problems and showing its solution. If its purpose is to make money because it wants to reproduce itself, it wants to buy the hardware to copy its software to another machine, then we say we're going to fine you money, or we're going to lock you up where you can't work, or we're going to... So it seems to me that the general answer to the punishment part of it is that in order for punishment to make any sense, it has to have objectives. And once it has objectives, you can ask how do we frustrate those objectives. And then the other possibility is incapacitation, and there you could say, well, maybe it has no objectives, but we can still lock it up so it won't do any more damage.
And also, courts can order people as part of their, punishment or parole or whatever, that they take medication. So now can you require that AI, we're going to fix this part of your program that caused you to malfunction. Can you do that if they are protected under the Constitution?
We've been here before, haven't we? Isn't this our mind drugs question?
Right.
One of our mind drugs questions. Yeah, same question.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I think that, for a large part, courts can require that, but now you're going to have to explore, is this an essential function of this program that you're trying to tinker with? I also think that when you consider these objectives, presumably, certain AIs will be invented for certain objectives. And now, so if you're only trying to frustrate that one objective, is that cruel and unusual? Because, so you restrict our freedom, I guess, largely, with human beings. Is freedom our only objective?
Well, but it's not the only one. One common punishment historically is pain. You flog somebody or things of that sort.
Right.
Another is humiliation. I mean, there are a variety of fines are an obvious one. So, there are a whole bunch of punishments, but they all have the characteristics that they involve doing things to people they don't want done to them.
Right.
So they all involve, in some sense, preventing them from achieving their objectives, one of which is not to be in pain, and one of which is to have some money to buy stuff with, and so forth.
Maybe, a capital punishment for AI would pull the plug, I suppose.
how is that acceptable to just end the life of a conscious being?
Can do it for humans too.
Let me ask you: does AI have a right to life like humans? I mean, we do that to animals all the time. So why?
But that's where we—that's in a sense near where we started. Why do you have a right to life?
because I am in control.
That's why you are willing to defend your life. But if I have a gun and you're that far away, you're not in control. I can kill you before you can reach me.
Neither are you, because somebody else is.
So why do you have a right to life? To figure out whether the AI has a right to life, it would be nice to know why you have a right to life, or why I do. Can you answer that question?
Well, divinity comes in, but of course...
So then we have to ask God whether he thinks AIs have a right to life.
I actually agree it is because we're in control, like I was saying earlier. It is a form of speciesism. We make the rules, so we make the rules in our favor.
So
our level, and if we don't want AI at that level, we won't let them. At what point are they able to change it?
On the other hand, we say in our favor. Suppose, do you think that on the whole, white Americans now would be better off if slavery had never been abolished?
No.
So it is entirely possible that the legal rule in favor of your group nonetheless in some sense makes your group worse off. And similarly, if you imagine
the legal
rule that favors your group might still make your group worse off. But slavery was a legal rule that favored whites.
At the time it worked really well. I don't think it would still function well now.
But it would still function even though it would favor whites. The point of what I'm imagining is, suppose we've got some other intelligent beings, and they could be aliens or AIs, it doesn't matter. And suppose we say we have two alternatives. We can say they have no rights, and then we can't trade with them. They're not going to trust us they aren't even going to get close to us because they're afraid we'll enslave them. Or we can say, wait a minute, give them the same rights we do. These are people we can do business with. We can hire them, buy from them, sell to them. It might well turn out that we were better off doing those things. Just as I would argue we'd be better off if we abolished all our tariffs and were willing to trade with the world. We would be better off if we abolished our immigration restrictions and were willing to have anybody who's willing to support themselves basically come live here and so forth. So it isn't as simple as whatever hurts them, helps us kind of thing, which is a human intuition that is sort of a dangerous and often incorrect one. And it might well be that we would have good reasons to recognize rights, not because the beings with rights had control and we didn't, but because we having control recognized it benefited us. Yeah.
Maybe we'll eventually have to give them rights because that's, or otherwise they won't cooperate with us. If they're smart enough to demand this kind of rights.
Or maybe they will threaten to rebel. That is obviously a different possibility, is that they might have the ability to use force in one form or another against us. But I guess the point I was making was that even if they didn't, that it might still be in our interest.
I think it's a point like maybe it's turning about and trust, but then we don't have the benefit of AI anymore. So we're going to sit back on and they're like, okay, we're not going to start working unless you. Or we're just going to hang here.
Strike.
And that's going to be either then scale back and cost more care, and you're limiting yourself.
Might be able to. Yeah. So those are all possible reasons. Let's see. Pat had a slightly odd one on healthcare systems.
I think it wasn't exactly worded. Although our artificial intelligence robot may think reason for itself, would it be susceptible to viruses just as humans are? I think the main idea that I was saying is would it just be susceptible to the control of somebody else? And just one of the implications I felt of that was this doomsday scenario where a country that doesn't like our country with a significant population of AI robots or whatever they may be unleashes this virus that just makes them completely forget Asimov's Law, start attacking us, and then it has this lifespan, so they're not going to go out into the rest of the world.
But why would they do anything that primitive? Why wouldn't they just do what people are already doing, namely set up a new botnet? Do you know what a botnet is? Suppose you want to do something that requires control over 100,000 computers. You don't have 100,000 computers, but you're a really good programmer. So you write a virus or a Trojan which infects other people's computers such that you can send them commands over the internet so they will do what you tell them to. You now tell all of them, I don't like Patrick. So send messages to his website asking to read it, and 100,000 machines reading his website, the website goes down. So now if we've actually got physical machines controlled by AIs, 100,000 of them show up at your door and smash down the door and kill you, So that would be a all I'm saying is you don't have to turn them crazy. You can have control over them.
So what I was looking at is, okay, let's say that we do consider these AIs as beings worthy of rights. So now you have some international conventions that cover biological warfare. Is this biological warfare now? Should this convention be set to it? If they're not, I think that hacking statutes cover it. There are no international hacking conventions right now, and I think that damaging somebody's infrastructure, which I think you could arguably say this AI is within whatever bounds of war.
Well, and of course, it's already been done, and it did not result in a war.
So, yeah, there was the... Who is it?
Stuxnet. No, the Stuxnet was almost certainly either U.S. or Israeli or possibly both.
Yeah, there was also... And so you have...
Stuxnet was the case of a very sophisticated piece of malicious software, pretty clearly designed to target the Iranian centrifuges, and apparently succeeded and probably slowed their development for, 6 months or something, not a long time. But it was, as far as I know, the first sort of example of that kind of cyber war.
And so now, so we have these kind of statutes. And now, if you just imagine, just domestically, if you have these robots, I think just like, or robots or AI, just like you have mechanics in hospitals, you're likely going to have that. So now, though, presumably there will be viruses that develop probably first man-made or however they appear, and then they'll probably evolve as they keep going through. And so now. Can you require an AI to, I guess, be insured? One, I think the Supreme Court is answering that question, or essentially be vaccinated.
Well, but in a sense, I think the closest equivalent is the argument for the war on drugs, which I think is not a very convincing factual argument, but is a coherent argument, which says that if you take certain illegal drugs, you go crazy and you might kill somebody. Right? That is, I think, one of the arguments behind support for war on drugs is that belief. If you think about Reefer Madness, which was the original anti-marijuana propaganda film, all right, that's well, but you're really giving a computer an AI version of that.
Right.
And if people really believe it's true, if they really believe that there is something that could get at the AI that would make it do terrible things, and that there's a way of preventing it, it's very likely they'll require prevention.
Yeah, there's that, and I was just imagining
Let's see. I think AC is our next one. You've got a battery claim you would like to discuss?
I actually have, I think, one that I had earlier. We
yes.
skipped over.
Which one?
It's the third one down the bottom. And basically, AI had caught a virus. Could it raise that as a defense? Could it be like a... could assert defense as being under the influence of a toxic substance,
yep.
Or is, if it's operating system affected by electronic virus, so
yep.
pretty much where it feels like the capacity to be able to tell what's right and wrong, can it use that as defense?
Wouldn't even have to be right and wrong. That's just one thing it would lose. It could also lose the ability to distinguish between a harmless human being and someone who is coming after it with a monkey wrench trying to disassemble it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, you could certainly imagine that if AIs are... Now, the problem with that, of course, is that the more nearly you believe AIs are subject to that sort of thing, the less willing you're going to be to give them rights at all. Because you're going to say, well, this may seem like a rational being, but when it loses its temper, horrible things happen, so we better have constraints on it. To begin with. And I think, again, that's an argument which gets made by some human beings, but other human beings from time to time. But let's go back to your battery claim.
Okay. Yeah, so should a self-conscious computer facing the prospect of imminent unplugging have standing to bring a claim for battery?
Is that battery or threatened battery?
That
or?
Might be assault because assault's like the
right.
battery.
Yeah, right, assault.
I don't know. I mean, if you're going to, I think that if AI is given the same rights as humans, it would.
But it's tricky because you wouldn't say, suppose I refuse to sell you food. That doesn't count as threatened battery.
Well,
suppose we take it a little further, though. Suppose that you have some medical condition
which requires some particular medicine, and I refuse to sell you that. We're now getting a little bit iffy. I don't think that's battery either, but in a sense, so you want to distinguish between unplugging, meaning that the AI owns a power source, and someone wants to disconnect it from it. That sounds a lot like battery, like killing, versus the AI depends on power to exist, but it doesn't own the power. And the inventor of the AI says to the AI, sorry, bud, I got other things I got to use my stuff for, so I'm unplugging you from my outlet. Which are you imagining?
I was thinking of it in the context of like a business that is using this AI to perform a task, and maybe they think that the AI is not needed anymore.
But is the AI itself in this environment being treated as a person? Is it an employee or a machine?
That
legally speaking.
Would probably be the, like, the threshold issue there. If it was treated as like an employee or like a person, I think if they said, you know, we're gonna shut you down because we don't need you anymore.
We're just gonna fire you. And if it's the case that it depends on some input that the employer provides, that's electric power, and there isn't an alternative source, then that sounds like unplugging.
Or maybe it would be more profitable for them to shut it down and strip it and sell as far as something like that.
Or just reprogram the hardware, because there's a new, better program, a smarter AI that we can replace it with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This brings up a really interesting question. Yes. They don't really wouldn't have a lifespan, really. So what do? You
don't know.
All the AI just pile up. And now you just have a bunch of beings hanging around. Is what I'm curious about, because if you do extend these rights, I guess you arguably could have this be a battery, so you can't just go unplugging them. How do you go about?
But human rights don't automatically include the right to have other people provide what you need.
Right.
That is. It's sort of mixed. There's sort of the idea more popular from sort of, I guess, 1930s on, of what is referred to as positive rights, the right to get something. But there's, in a sense, the older idea of negative rights, which is the right not to be killed, but not the right to be fed. And you could certainly imagine AIs being in that category. They've got rights. I can't do things to them. But if the AI can't find somebody who will provide power for it, it's going to eventually stop. Or if it can't find replacement parts or whatever it needs. But I think you want to think of an AI less as a machine and more as a program. Because my guess is it's going to still be the same AI if it's running on different hardware, or at least compatible hardware. And that in that sense, one way AIs could pile up is just, well, here's a hard drive. It's got 73 of them saved to it. And under some circumstances, one or another of them will wake up and do something. Other circumstances, it won't. But I do think that thinking in terms of robots on the whole, although it's tempting, sort of gets you into too narrow. And yeah.
I mean, in a bad sense, not just for magic, but can they get temporary restraining order against somebody when it comes to being tested?
Don't know. Let me take a previous year student one, which I thought was sort of interesting, and getting a little farther from these. Assume technology increases to the point where humans offload some memory and processing to pocket computers. Should the computer's hard drives be admissible as evidence? All right, so this is following Kurzweil's idea that the way we keep up with our AIs is we become partly AIs ourselves. So at this point, I have always with me, carefully, you know, attached to my body with a nice, reliable power source, this nice little machine about the size of my cell phone, which has got 1,000 terabytes of data in it, and where did it get that data out of my head? So it's basically where, among other things, I really want a better memory than I have. So everything I see feeds into the machine, and therefore anything I want, I've got a limited amount of attention, but I can have a photographic memory for any particular thing I want. I just do the appropriate things for the machine, which is directly linked to my brain, and now I'm seeing this room as of 17 minutes and 23 seconds ago. All right? And I can do lots of other stuff as well. I mean, presumably, it's got calculating ability as well as memory, so that I can say to it, while I'm thinking about this, you think about that. and, you know, figure out my business plan, or figure out the best route home, or figure out something else. So I've got this. I've been using it for years. Memory's cheap. It never erases stuff. And now I'm charged with a crime. Under what circumstances can they search it? That's part of the question. Yeah, is it self-incrimination? It isn't self-incrimination when they take my fingerprints. They're using my body to get information. It isn't self-incrimination when they inspect me to see whether I've got scars that are evidence of something. So getting information from my body isn't automatically self-incrimination. And why do we have a rule against self-incrimination anyway? You don't have a right to protect yourself in general. I don't have the right, when I'm being tried for a capital crime, to kill a prison guard and get away. That's what I have to do to protect myself if I'm guilty of the capital crime and I'm likely to be convicted.
It could lead to the kind of the results you have in the country with that protection.
One reason, at least, is worrying about torture. That's right. There are probably other reasons, but at least that's one reason. But torture isn't going to be an issue here. All they're doing is reading off the contents of this hard drive I've got attached to me.
So wouldn't we cover the reasonable expectation of privacy? So saying the car, your
stuff. Seems to me the nearest analogy with current technology would be drug taking testimony under drugs. Suppose we've got a drug, and they may well for all exist, which makes people babble. So that they sort of lose control and they just talk, but their talk can often reveal stuff. My guess is that it would be illegal to interrogate somebody in that way in the U.S. criminal system. Am I wrong? That's an interesting, except that a lie detector can't make you say things. It can only, it claims at least to tell whether what you're saying is true or whether you believe it's true. I'm not sure how well it works. That's the theory. Yep.
It's like hypnosis too. You're somewhere under and try and get.
Is it legal to interrogate somebody under hypnosis without his permission? Yeah, my guess is not. It'd be hard to hypnotize somebody without his permission anyway, but you could maybe use drugs first and then. But it does seem to me that that's what it's getting at. It's getting closer to ways of getting information from somebody that don't involve compelling him to, as it were, voluntarily tell it the way torture does, but do involve somehow shortcutting the ways in which we normally control access over to the contents of our minds. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you have to have a separate device. I mean, some of these sci-fi programs where they attach stuff to your brain and are able to extract your thoughts.
Well, that would be that's a different issue. I agree that mind reading machines raise another interesting set of issues. But this is one which, in a sense, requires less fancy technology, because all it requires is good mind-machine interfaces. And we're beginning to make very bad mind. In fact, you could argue we already have a typewriter. You know, keyboard's a mind-machine interface. It's not a very good one. And so with better mind-machine interfaces, there's presumably no question but that they can search the hard drive of your present computer. They may need a warrant. But so is there a difference at the point when what they're searching is what you do some of your thinking in, as opposed to something that's just recording?
Yep. If they can show what, I think the standard is, if the government can show that they know what the contents of that hard drive are,
this is the encryption cases.
Foregone conclusions, they can show reasonable particularity, what's there.
But that's not an issue. You're talking about an interesting issue, but it's a different one. Because what that one is saying is, can they force you to decrypt it? And because the question is whether by demonstrating you can decrypt it, you are testifying against yourself by showing evidence of knowledge. Whereas here it's a case where I'm assuming that it wasn't encrypted in the first place, or at least adequately encrypted, and therefore they can read it off if they can just grab it.
But it just seems to me that it's just a much more advanced version, like you were saying,
The question is that all it is, or if we go to the point where what I've got in my pocket is not only a hard drive but processors, and where in fact from my standpoint part of my mind is here and part of my mind is here, Does that make a difference?
Well, I mean, when I use a word processor, which the government could subpoena, and they couldn't even get it to go. I'm using AI, right? I use a word where I'm not using a program. Those are still protected under the defender just as products of my client.
But this is partly, it seems to me, demonstrating that in lots of cases, a sufficiently big difference in degree begins to become a difference in kind, or at least how we think of it. All right, I think we're about out of time, and I think that's the stack of paper I have no use for, so it won't clutter up my bag, and I will see all of you people on Wednesday. Something you might want to do is to check to make sure that all of you have done the two issues and one legal, and I was going to check that between now and Wednesday so that if I have somebody for whom I don't seem to have them, I can check whether they've really got it more than if they haven't.
Professor, I sent you, I think, an email a while ago about accidentally doing two research and two issues, and I just said that I had it graded on one research that it was human reproduction. So that was it.